Hey everybody, it's the Nobody Likes Casey McClain podcast, and this is going to be a solo episode that's kind of reminiscent of what you can get on my Substack. I have a Substack where you get an extra episode each week. What's the cheapest it can be? $5 a month? It's going to go to Patreon eventually. I thought that I would go over to Substack and start writing blog posts, but it just hasn't happened. Time, energy. Got a lot of irons in the fire. So anyway, what I do weekly on Substack is have a barely censored version of it's a little bit stream of consciousness. Usually it's a little bit planned, but it's like the shit that's too hot for the regular podcast. And so this will be kind of like that because I mean, and also, by the way, sometimes it's too boring for the regular podcast. That's why it's more fun to hear me talk to other people usually. But if you like me, if you're not here because Gabriel Rutledge or fucking whoever the guest is, if you're not here because you're a fan of them, if you're here, you might like that. Sometimes they're not great. Sometimes I'm tired. It's called the nightcap. And I usually will sit down with a drink and do, you know, a little bit of a plan, a little stream of consciousness. I'll give my actual controversial political opinions instead of the Boy Scout that I am when I'm talking on the public feed. And I have, like, you know, bad political opinions sometimes. So that can be enjoyable. My trust is that if you're giving me $5 a month, you're not going to cancel me. You can cancel your subscription if you don't like it. I don't mind that. But you should be one of these type of people who aren't out to ruin comedians. If you're one of those people, if you're out to ruin comedians, fuck yourself. Don't listen. You know what I'm saying. I'm looking at my, I wrote this down next to where I have the podcast equipment set up in my dining room right now. And I have a shopping list for Thanksgiving. That's exciting. Is that exciting for everybody? Okay. This is my shopping list. Oh, and I have a joke premise that I thought of last night. I'm not drinking tonight, by the way. I'm actually, as I record this, it's noon. I'm doing the Kenan Thompson, it's not a contest, it's like a showcase at Tacoma Comedy Club. There will be like talent scouts there. I'm not going to get it probably. And that's not even talking shit. It's just like the what they want is youth and diversity, and I check none of those boxes. I'm not diverse in any way. I check no diversity boxes, and I'm not that young for a comedian. So we'll see. If I crush, maybe I could play, you know, somebody's fucking creepy uncle or something. I don't even, there's not really, like, by the way, like a contest there. You can win like a I guess like a trip to New York, but I don't know how many of these trips they're giving out. Again, the chances of me getting it are very low. So don't cry for me. What is Don't Cry for Me Argentina from? That's a thing, right? Where did that come from? We're going to find out right now. I have the power in the palm of my hands. Don't Cry for Me Argentina is a song by Madonna. All right. I don't know. It was on a movie. I don't give a fuck anymore. I'm over that. Okay, shopping list for Thanksgiving. Turkey breast separately, smoking one, roasting the other, mashed potatoes, stuffing. We do out-of-the-box stuffing. Cranberry sauce. Not out of the can, baby. There's actually, when I was like a youth, Adam Carolla talked about on Loveline his cranberry sauce recipe, and I've been using that for years. Crowd pleaser, by the way. It's I think ingratiated me with my in-laws. Like, people love that shit. I don't even like it that much. I'm like, I actually kind of like the canned shit, but people love, they get real excited when you bring in that homemade cranberry sauce. What else? Olives. This is a tradition in my family to bring olives, and then the smallest child has to put them on their fingers. Black olives has to put them on their fingers and eat them off their fingers. That's the rules. And at one point, the youngest child at our Thanksgiving was like my 25-year-old brother-in-law. But rules are rules, motherfucker. You put those on your fingers and you eat them. Or else. All right. So, I played Chambers Bay Golf Course yesterday as I record this. Is that right? 2 days ago as I record this. With my buddy Corey Michaelis, who's probably going to be next week's podcast guest. We're doing a show on Friday together in Richland at a golf country club, and I suspect that I will be conning him into podcasting at some point on the trip, either on the drive or in the hotel. So we went to Chambers Bay Golf Course. Corey's a member, so I got a pretty good deal. $92, I think, after tax, which, by the way, still by far the most I've spent on a golf round. And I did film it. I was going to not film it because I didn't want to have that me struggling at Chambers Bay on film, like, first time out. But then I was like, well, if I'm going to spend $92, I should be getting some fucking content for the old Road Hacks channel. By the way, check that out on YouTube. New videos coming out. My pal Jess Everett, frequent guest of Road Hacks, is doing some video editing work now, which is deeply appreciated and needed. So Chambers Bay will be coming soon. It's going to be, I mean, probably months until that video comes out because we have a couple things in between. But anyway, it was amazing. It was, I will say, it was like 40 degrees out and it was super windy, like 15 mile an hour winds and probably up to like 40 mile an hour gusts, like just absolutely blasting. It made it hard to keep the ball in the fairway, and I'm not great at that anyway. Also, you would just, you'd hit like a driver on some holes with the wind in your face, and what is normally for me like a 250 yard driver was like a 175 yard drive. It was just like, it was just absolutely crushing distance on any club that gets up into the air. And but it was so fun and so beautiful. I didn't post any pictures. I have a couple funny pictures from the golf course, but it was so beautiful. It's such a great setting. You're like overlooking Chambers Bay in University Place. Truly just this like beautiful setting you're looking at. Maybe I will say this is dorky, but when the first time I ever saw this golf course, there's a park called like Chambers Bay Park, and you can walk through the park, and the path for the park goes through the golf course. And my wife and I have walked that path a couple times, but when you're at the top, when you're on, I think it's the north end of the golf course, the northeast side of the golf course, there's a parking lot where you can get into the park, and you're overlooking the entirety of, it's like Chambers Park or Chambers Bay Park, whatever it's called. This is dorky, but when I looked at that the first time, I was like, this is why people believe in God, is sites like this. This is why they believe in God, because this is so, it's breathtaking and majestic, and it's like, you can't even, I get it. And then I found out that I think that whole shit's built on a gravel pit. Like, it's all, none of this is nature's creation, right? This is all just fucking man-made soil poured over a gravel pit. So, yeah, it's still beautiful. And it's still a tremendous golf course. I really love it. But I remember having that disappointment of like, oh, this used to be a pile of shit. And then they basically poured a nice golf course on top of it. Is that right? Let's look this up. Oh, we could look this up. Chambers Bay Golf Course. I'm going to see. I actually thought it was like a garbage dump the first time. Chambers Bay Golf Course. Gravel. Yeah, abandoned. It was an abandoned quarry. I don't remember it being an abandoned quarry. I never really spent a lot of time out there. But anyway, yeah, it's like a pile of shit that they poured a golf course on top of. Which, a good use of a pile of shit. One of the best uses of a pile of shit I could think of, but it's funny, we had a couple holes. There's an iconic, I think it's like the 14th hole. We played the back nine. We started on the back nine. played the 14th hole, and everybody got on the green but me, and I put the ball in the sand. And then I hit one of the worst bunker shots in the history of golf. Common mistake. Hit it right into the fucking berm. And then I hit one of the best bunker shots of my life to follow that up. My short game's trash. I'm not a good golfer. Go check it out at Road Hacks on YouTube. Maybe I'll cut the Chambers Bay shit in line because it's pretty fun. I do think it's a fun course. It'll be a fun video. Beautiful course. It was so windy, I ended up breaking the lens cover for my camera. So I got to buy a new one. So that what you'll see is, so on hole, I guess it would have been like hole 5, which is the 14th hole we played. I think that's how it works out, right? Because we played the back 9 first. The wind got so bad, and I put my ball up onto a hill, and the way I set my cart, my cart tipped over because of the wind, and it spilled my beer, it spilled my water, it spilled in my camera, the lens cracked, and this will all be on the video, by the way, when it finally comes, but that was one of like 4 times that I was fighting this cart from going over. It was very frustrating, very... And there's nothing even you can do. It's just so much goddamn wind, and this fucking bag and cart combo are like a sail in the wind, and it just kept tipping over, so it was annoying. In a normal at one point, it tipped over, and like 8 balls flew out of my bag, were rolling down the green. It's very annoying. Very embarrassing. And not only the dudes am I playing with, is it embarrassing in that setting, but there's a group behind us that's like, gotta be like, what the fuck is this moron doing up there? It's a slow round. It was like basically 5 hours. We played it in 5 hours, and it's slow. That is slow, but I don't think we really slowed anyone down. It's a long course, though. I was very sore that when I got home, and the next day I was very sore. All right, what else do we got? Oh, yeah, so Russell Wilson is getting some shit right now. It's just like a constant Russell Wilson shit fest, and I don't know how to feel about it because I do still have affection for Russell Wilson. I think if he was winning in Denver and the Seahawks were losing, we'd still think that Subway commercial he did was very fucking cringy, and that the way he's acting in some ways is very cringy. But the fact that not only they're not playing well, the Broncos aren't playing well, he's not playing well, they traded Bradley Chubb, which is like kind of a white flag for the season. And then Russell Wilson puts a play sheet on his arm, one of those like armbands, when he's in London, and he leads his team to victory over Jacksonville. Pete Carroll got asked about that and said that I don't have the exact quote, but... Wilson, what did he say? This is the quote. There was resistance to that, so we didn't do that. Meaning Russell Wilson resisted this play sheet. And there's shit to me that's like, men's egos are fucked up. Men's egos, how many dudes do you know who just will like never admit to being wrong about anything, ever? And even when they're wrong, there's like some excuse about bandwidth or whatever. I mean, I deal with this all the time. I fucking deal with customers. I deal with comedy bookers. I deal with people that whose egos are tied up in them being right. And so, yeah, men have a hard time admitting they're wrong. I mean, it's probably, I think women, my wife has a hard time admitting she's wrong. Don't tell her, please. But no, this is like it's like the only reason you wouldn't put that armband on is for ego purposes, because you don't want to look like the kind of guy that needs to look at an armband. But fuck that. Fuck that. You should be doing everything you need to do to win. That's what the fans want. The fans, it's like if Ken Griffey Jr. He played like in a casual way. In fact, people, coaches, little league coaches back in the day would get pissed off at Ken Griffey Jr. because he would make these one-handed catches in the outfield. And the fundamentals you teach kids are catch with two hands. I was very coordinated as a kid. I could easily catch with one hand. I had a coach that got so mad at me for because I would field balls with one hand on a regular basis. Then he goes, listen, Casey, if you're not going to field with two hands, I have a thing. I have it. We call it the tool. We have a tool for this. It's called the tool. And what it was like a ping pong paddle strapped to your hand. And now that's what you field with at practice. You don't get your glove anymore. You get a piece of wood stuck to your hand. So you can't field it. In fact, it's harder to field with two hands with a ping pong paddle, as you'd imagine, than a leather glove that you can close onto something. So it forced you to field with two hands. And so I had to use this thing so much that they gave us like customized shirts at the end of the year, and mine said the tool, where a name would be. Everybody had nicknames and shit on their shirt. It wasn't like the coach singled me out. But these are like, this is what you got to do to win. It may not look as cool as Ken Griffey Jr. making these casual one-handed catches, but my coach doesn't give a fuck about it looking casual. He wants to win, even though we're fourth graders or whatever the thing is, whatever year we're in. He doesn't give a shit about that. He wants to win. And that's all we want from Russell Wilson, right? Wear the fucking wristband. And he's doing it in Denver, it seems like. And maybe this will be the resurgence of the Denver Broncos, and maybe it'll you know, right the ship for Russell Wilson. But it's this, everything about this as a Seahawks fan, I think, has to make you question the way that you've evaluated their offensive coordinators over the years. Like, how much blame can you continue to give Daryl Bevel? How much blame can you continue to give Brian Schottenheimer, Shane Waldron? How much? And how much of it was Russell Wilson being annoying in different ways? I don't know what the answer is, but what I could say is every time one of these stories comes out, there hasn't been one that's like, oh, actually, Russell Wilson was really great about this. The public-facing image of Russell Wilson, I will say this, this is cowardly of Pete Carroll. And it's some of the shit with the media even is pretty cowardly. The fact that it took him leaving the city to report this is straight up cowardly. What is the saying? There's a fucking saying about journalism that I love so much. I think it's Oscar Wilde, but it might be like H.G. Wells. George Orwell, who I mix up with H.G. Wells. Journalism is printing what someone else does not want published. Everything else is public relations. And that's like the perfect encapsulation of journalism in this country. Is, oh man, it's going to be such a good segue into our next topic too. It's a perfect encapsulation. People knew about this. You start to hear these stories about from journalists who are like, yeah, when he was here, he did this annoying thing. And it's like, maybe the Seahawks were threatening access to anyone reporting negatively on the team. But if that's the case, that's also a story. But journalism is no longer a working class job. Now it's you're fucking trading on your own influencership, you know? And so these stories got fucking suppressed. We never heard about it. Now they're coming out when he's gone behind his back. I still have a ton of appreciation for Russell Wilson. I actually don't, I'm not really rooting against Russell Wilson. I'd like to see him become a Hall of Famer. And I'm in Seattle, he was well on his way. Denver's got to really be unhappy with that trade at the moment, though. And you wonder if, you know, I think you're Denver and Russell Wilson are kind of stuck together for the next 3-4 years, I think. But maybe Russell Wilson finishes his career in Seattle wearing a wristband. I don't know. Probably not. I imagine they'll have... I mean, it's not going to be Pete Carroll probably by the end, but then I guess I thought Pete Carroll would be retired by now anyway. All right, last topic. Nike cut ties with Kyrie Irving over the... Kyrie shared an anti-Semitic movie. I did a little bit of research into the movie, and I think that it certainly seems like there's... I can... Like, I don't think this is a situation where to be able to, like... It seems like in the movie... I didn't watch it, but it seems like in the movie there's enough anti-Semitic stuff that it's not like one of these situations where it's like, well, he did a movie with so-and-so and that person. It's not like a, like, he said, she said, or that nuanced. The movie seems somewhat anti-Semitic. I do kind of have a thing where I can understand somebody gleaning something valuable from a movie, from content, from people who hold regressive, ugly beliefs. I mean, I think an example of that is, like, Abraham Lincoln was a fucking racist. It's not to say that he didn't do amazing things for slaves. Obviously, he emancipated slaves. But his personal views, at least as he presented them in speeches, were incredibly regressive. Not even regressive. I guess not regressive for the time, right? They were regression is relative. They were, his overall views were pretty progressive for the time. But go back and read some old Lincoln speeches, and you're like, fuck. They really are cherry-picking some lines out of these speeches, because boy was that guy saying some pretty horrible stuff in speeches. Gandhi, obviously, Gandhi was racist, by the way. If you ever go look up, like, the Gandhi's, his letters from prison, they're fucking horrible. They have paragraphs that are good surrounded by just racist, regressive, horrible shit for today, by today's standards. There's an author that I like, an aphorist named Emil Cioran, who was like a straight up Nazi sympathizer. And that's not the only reason I like him. I'm just kidding. No, there was like a ton of Nazi sympathizers, by the way. Back in the time of the Nazi, there were a lot of Nazi sympathizers. So yeah, I mean, I guess like to me, just sharing the thing, but also what I think it's underreported and what we don't appreciate enough about this specific group being persecuted, the Jews. Jewish people are 2.5 times as likely to be the victim of a hate crime as a black person, adjusted for population. Many of those hate crimes are actually at the hands of, like, Hebrew Israelites, who are... This is kind of that view, by the way, like, when Kanye... I find these, like, this, like... I find the like, interaction between these groups interesting... One, like, for example, the Nation of Islam is a black separatist organization, and the Aryan Nations are a white separatist organization. And those two groups actually get along because they want the same thing, ultimately. So Hebrew Israelites, if you remember from what Kanye said, he said that because he's black, he's Jewish, or actually he said, because I'm black, I'm also Jew. which is a weird thing that he's doing. I don't really understand the purpose. I listened to the Lex Fridman interview and he talked about it. I wasn't convinced that there was anything, any valuable reason to phrase it that way. But that's like Black Hebrew Israelite ideology. His whole thing wasn't, but that specific thing that like black people are the true Hebrews. And whatever, this is the same shit that's in, as I understand it, is in this Kyrie Irving thing. And it's kind of like, I don't know, I do kind of appreciate, I will say, that these dudes are being held accountable, even though like Nike is holding Kanye and Kyrie Irving accountable, but not Phil Knight, the owner, for horrible working conditions for children making shoes in Asia. What's worse, sharing a link to a movie that's got some anti-Semitic tropes in it, or putting children from another country through into a life condition that we would not accept for our own children in America, and then not caring about it because they're not American children? Which of those things is actually, I mean, the anti-Semitism is very bad, don't get me wrong. And I don't know what the, like, there's like a problem, right? Like I think part of the thing is we backed ourselves into a corner a little bit with the rhetoric from the last couple of years. But what Kanye said and what Kyrie said are both very bigoted, and we're scared to say the word racism when it's not about white and black, or when it's not about white people. But these are like, does Kyrie Irving have like legislative voting power? Absolutely not. But he's got a huge platform. This is not a dude who is he's overcome oppression to get where he's at, is what I'm saying ultimately. And it's, I know individualism, people who are like it's always like everything has to be, it's either fine or it's Nazism. So people are like, oh, individualists are fucking whatever. This dude, Kyrie Irving, wealthy, educated, smart guy, I believe affluent parents, affluent upbringing. This guy is a fucking bigot and a racist. Right? Isn't that like ultimately the deal? Why are we making these like silly distinctions of like what? Like there's people out there going like, oh, thank God I wasn't actually the victim of racism. I was just the victim of race-based bigotry. That's all. What the fuck is the point of that distinction? It's so stupid. Kyrie Irving, though, I mean, I also don't know if he is. He could be, there's like a, I think that most people don't know what Hebrew Israelites are. And I think the people that do are hesitant to, are oftentimes hesitant to assign the same negative characteristics that they would assign to, like, say, the Westboro Baptist Church, or that they would assign to even like Joel Osteen or something like that. And I think it's like, it's wrong. I mean, this shit is fucking, if it's not dangerous, then we got to really, because we've allowed a lot of things in this world to be called dangerous. This type of rhetoric is pretty fucked up. So anyway, I don't know. I mean, I also think Nike, get your shit together, Nike. This isn't, I mean, Nike's just a fucking single-minded, money-minded corporation. But as a public, shouldn't we be also examining the people who are doing the canceling? Shouldn't we also be doing that? You think Nike doesn't have human rights violations in its history? Give me a break. I mean, I think there's probably companies that worked with Kanye who literally made, I mean, I should look this up. but that might there could very easily be a company that worked with Kanye that literally also worked with the Nazis that will cancel him in 2022. I'm fine with, by the way, like if he is crushing his own brand and he's selling his own brand, I understand these people breaking ties with him. But I think us as the public, we don't have to abide by those same. I don't give a fuck about Nike's profits. If they made wider shoes and I could fit my feet in them, maybe I would care about them. But they mean nothing to me. And they should also be examined for the same morality they expect out of Kyrie Irving, you know? I also saw a thing about Phil Knight that I'm interested in. Basically, Phil Knight gives a lot of charity. Phil Knight's the owner of Nike, by the way, and is a booster for the University of Oregon. And he donates a bunch of money to charity, and people praise him for that. But the charity that he donates the most money to is like the Phil Knight Foundation. The Knight Family Foundation or some shit like that. And I kind of think, if we're simplifying the tax code, you shouldn't be able to donate money to your own charity and write it off in taxes. All right. Oh, man. This is what you get. This is what you can buy for fucking $5 a month or whatever it is. Coming to Patreon soon, presently on Substack. This is what is available to you. How exciting for you. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Come see me, by the way, next week. I'm headlining Vino Bella in Issaquah. I'm headlining Yoked Farmhouse Brewing in Port Orchard. I'm at the Manresa Castle in Port Townsend. Then check thecaseymclain.com for stand-up dates. Thank you for listening to this podcast. The Casey McClain on all social media. I'll talk to you later.